This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we're talking about Paddington in Peru.
This is a funny thing going on where I haven't seen the sequel of films. So I haven't seen Paddington 2. I've seen Tom's face right now. He is distraught.
What?
I'm very sorry, Tom. I haven't seen Paddington 2.
It's on iPlayer. You need to watch it.
Okay, iPlayer. Yay! iPlayer. Bless iPlayer because they've got everything right now and you can watch it. And
the good old BBC.
Yeah, and they put One Pieces there as well, so that's fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, Paddington, a well-beloved bear in good old Britain where our drinking culture is all over the place. And, you know, we've got good old Paddington.
Sorry, I just can't believe that you haven't seen the sequel. Because Paddington 2, I mean, okay, so it's been just over 7 years. I think Paddington 2 came out in 2017 and the first Paddington came out 2015, maybe 2014, I'm not quite sure. And we're reuniting with the whole Brown clan. Almost the same. We have lost Sally Hawkins and instead we have Emily Mortimer playing Mrs. Brown. And this time we're kind of shaken up. They go to Peru to find El Dorado, which I'm pretty sure is a plot of an Uncharted game.
Yes, the very first one. I just kept thinking about it all the way throughout the movie. I was like, damn, I'm missing Charlie so much.
And then Paddington. As one of the greatest adventures of all time, we have Paddington Bear. It's crazy because when the first film came out, obviously for people here in Britain, it was like, oh my God, Paddington, a national icon, and he's getting a film. Yeah. And we all kind of expected it to be, I personally expected it to be just fine. Didn't expect it to knock my socks off. But it absolutely did. This is one of the best films just ever made. I think the first Paddington is so near perfection. The second film is so near perfection. We were spoiled with how good those two films were. And so when you get to the third one, there's a lot on its shoulders in this film. And the second one, the cast expands. You get Brendan Gleeson and Hugh Grant. And in this one, we have Olivia Colman and Antonio Banderas and various roles. And they are going wider with this scope, with this kind of Peru adventure. But here's the thing as well. We have also lost the director, Paul King, and writer of the first two films, because he went on to make Wonka, the absolute masterpiece that is. And I can't lie to you, John. This film was a massive, massive disappointment for me. Yeah, I didn't like this one. I'm sorry, everyone.
It's funny because I didn't hear anything from you when you saw Paddington from Peru. I was like, this is keeping under wraps about it. You know, like when you told me about Wonka, you're like, oh, John, you gotta watch Wonka. It's such an amazing movie. And you were right. It is an incredible movie, Wonka. Paul King cooked.
I do want to get history right here. It was the other way around. You told me to watch Wonka.
Did I?
Yeah, I literally said, hey, on the pod this week.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Do you remember what the other option was for that week?
You tell me.
It was Rebel Moon. I was like, should we watch Rebel Moon?
Oh my God.
Or
yes.
Wonka.
And we wanted to talk about Wonka. Yeah.
Yeah. You were like, we have to watch Wonka. I just saw it. And I was like, okay, I did not have faith in that film at all, but Paul King always delivers.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm very glad I told you about that because Rebel Moon! Yeah! And I gotta say as well, I agree, this was such a disappointment because I was just so excited. I was like, okay, Paddington, I haven't seen the second one. I haven't seen the first one in years. Let's see how this goes.
It's good to know you were well prepared. You did the
reading. I was very well prepared, guys. Don't worry. I had some marmalade for me. I didn't have marmalade.
Nice.
I was expecting more of it, really. Mm. I was expecting that kind of humor that we had in Paddington, the first one, which was very funny. I wish there was more of a flair in this one because I just felt like this is just some generic adventure story. It just felt like there wasn't a lot of heart from the first one because the Brown family had a lot of this whimsy.
The thing about the first Paddington, and this is something that, I don't really see people talking about, but it's not about Paddington. It's about Mr. Brown. And this man learning to embrace change and his arc, it never fails to bring a tear to my eye. The scene where they're on the roof and they protect Paddington and they proclaim that he is family. That's cinema right there. And the second one, that's about finding the good in everyone and accepting who you are. And I love those two films as companion pieces. They work so well. And this film is about what? What is this film actually about? I don't even know. There's this small idea about Paddington Paddington having a crisis of identity and accepting that he's a mix of different places, but it just kind of crops up at the end. That's not a theme throughout. You don't feel that. There's no tear-jerking moments. And there's so many people who are saying, oh yeah, it's not as good as the other two, but it's still great. And it's like, I think that is an insult to the emotional intelligence and the quality of the other two. And this film came out in November in the UK and is coming out in February in the US. That's why this video is releasing now in February. We are recording this in December though, so this is, it's a weird thing to talk about. John, just wait till you find out what we're doing next week. But all the UK critics have been like, yeah, no, it's still great, and the Rotten Tomatoes score is still really high, and oh, it's not as good as 201, but it's still amazing. What movie did they watch? Seriously, what movie did they watch? I am just astounded by how much I didn't like this film.
Yeah, again, I thought there was going to be more to offer. I thought Olivia Colman had so much fun. She had so much energy as one of the nuns, the singing nuns. That was a good sequence when they sing Paddington is coming to Peru.
And yes.
There was one joke that I actually laughed really hard when Olivia Colman, she throws the guitar in the air. She's still singing. So, and then she just gets exhausted and she still catches the guitar, which was which was good.
It's a very Sound of Music moment.
It is. Like she's frolicking around to the fields of Peru.
The famous Peru fields.
Yes, Peruvian fields.
The hills are alive with the sound of nuns. My favorite joke, as somebody who hated the comedy in this film, like I hated it, I thought it was not a funny film. There is one brilliant joke where I think maybe Antonio Banderas or his character's daughter mentions El Dorado for the first time, and Paddington goes, "El Dorado? You don't mean," and then it cuts to him and Jonathan at like a chicken shop in London called El Dorado. He's like, oh, these are lovely chips. That's just really funny, because the best thing about Paddington is that he's a bear in London. That's why it works. Peru is just a really boring and uninteresting setting. It's just trees and a river, and the actual moments we were in London, I was like, this is the appeal. Okay. This is why Paddington works, not this bland forest setting.
I mean, when you look at other adventure movies, you got a human character in the story who's exploring uncharted territories. However, this is Paddington, who is a bear. He knows his way. So it's kind of like there wasn't really any conflict to explore that. Whereas Paddington in London, exploring London, that was more exciting and funny to watch, to see him trying to navigate through a city that is full of surprises. He causes so much trouble. And that's why the first two films had so much witty comedy in it. That was lacking a lot of, like, how is he going to get to Peru? There wasn't really any comedy from him.
There's so many brilliant bits, especially in the first one, like the escalator bit where he's standing on the escalator and it's like, stand on the right, dogs must be carried. Just really funny moments which kind of highlights the differences of Paddington to his surroundings, and that is the catalyst for so much comedy but also so much drama. And that really, really works. Like when he leaves the Brown's house in the first film and he's sleeping on the bench and it's raining, that's heartbreaking because you really feel like he is lost. I love that. And the thing about especially the second film is that only Paddington could make the prison go from this gritty and dangerous place to a lovely place where everyone's wearing pink and they all make cakes for each other and they're all polite and they all listen to a bedtime story before they go to bed. Paddington has that influence. But this film, I feel like this could have been anyone. It doesn't have to be a Paddington story. This isn't unique to him. I didn't feel to myself, ah yes, only Paddington could find El Dorado. Like, no, I really could just imagine any. There's a whole bit with a boulder, obviously very reminiscent of Indiana Jones, but it could just be Indiana Jones. There's literally nothing that makes me think this is a Paddington story, which then, like, what's the point? Why even make the film at all if it's just what feels like stock characters?
Yeah, the movie didn't really offer ideas about what the characters want more in this story. There wasn't really any emotional intelligence from the Brown family itself. It just felt like they were just there all the way through, and I don't think they just learned a lot from Peru. I just think they were just basing their fears and that's it, which was just, again, a very generic thing. The humor just didn't really land. It's just very forced from the Brown family, which was very sad.
I think that is because we've lost Paul King and Simon Farnaby writing this.
Paul King!
The king himself! They are incredibly funny, and you could argue, oh yeah, it's just Paddington, that's lightning in a bottle, but no, with Wonka as well, and Paul King also directed the entirety of The Mighty Boosh, which is also an incredibly funny show. The guy just gets it, and so much of the dialogue, it doesn't feel charming or natural, it feels so very forced, and like he's stripping everything down to just the core moments. Like Mr. Brown, he has the exact same arc as the first film. He learns to loosen up, he learns to take risks, and that's exactly what he does in this film. He's like, oh, I must take risks in my life because I want to impress Hayley Atwell, my new boss.
Who's American in the movie as well.
Yeah, like, why are we casting Hayley Atwell if you're gonna make her American? Like, guys, come on.
That was
what are you
very
doing?
Unexpected.
It's because every British actor wants to be in Paddington. Fair enough. If they were like, you want to be in Paddington, you gotta do an American accent, it's like, yes, I do. Yes, I do want to be in Paddington. It's fine. But Mr. Brown just goes through the exact same thing, but it's not nearly as emotional or mature. Like, in the first film, when he climbs out of the window, and in doing so, he takes Mrs. Brown in his arms, and he gives her a kiss, and he's expressing his love in a way that we've never seen before. And then he shimmies across the building, he scales the building. He is Nathan Drake, that's right. And that moment as well, seeing him being this kind of heroic figure to his family, when he goes to Paddington, he says, I'm so sorry, we didn't believe you. It's a moment for him to finally admit that he was wrong, and oh my god, Paddington 1 is so good! And this is such a perversion of all those things. I swear, the characters are so stupid now. There's a moment where the family wake up and they hear this mysterious noise, this kind of big creature. What does Mrs. Brown do? She doesn't think logically and think, okay, maybe we could climb a tree, maybe we could kind of hide behind something, you know, she doesn't think about protecting her family. She runs at it. She runs at the giant creature, which is completely out of character, and it's not funny, it's not charming, it's just like, okay, so you're stupid now, so you've lost all your intelligence in between two films.
Yeah. The other thing is the antagonists. Should we just get into spoilers?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Olivia Colman's character reveals that she's a bad guy, which I'm pretty sure everyone saw it coming. It's one of those predictable things ever.
Although they do a fun little bait and switch where Mrs. Bird keeps on being really suspicious. Olivia Colman will say, it's nothing suspicious. And the audience goes, that sounds a little bit suspicious. And Mrs. Bird goes, that sounds a little bit suspicious. And then we find out that it's actually something that the nuns aren't really trying to hide. They do try and make you feel like it's not the villain, and that's a little bit fun, but it's always like, this is absolutely the villain.
Yeah, it is the villain. And then it reveals that she's actually not a nun.
What?
Who is she?
I don't know. I can't remember. Okay, is she related to Antonia Banderas?
Cousin, yeah.
Cousin.
That was so out of place. I was like, what?
No, genuinely, why is Antonia Banderas Thorin from The Hobbit? He's got dragon sickness, and he's just like, I want me gold. And then at the end, he's like, oh no, family is more important. Like, it's the exact same arc that Thorin has in The Hobbit.
It's just so funny that you got actors that have the same arc from a lot of things in just one movie. But yeah, for Olivia Colman, yeah, she just wants the gold, I guess, as well. Everybody just wants the gold. But the other thing as well that kind of pisses me off is when he gets the gold later on, like after this whole thing, he's like, oh, I got it. But then he just throws it away. I get it. Like, if you want to do it for family, great. But you found
it's right
it.
There.
It's just right there. You don't need to go another journey. You could have got that. And it's like, oh, I couldn't have sold this on eBay for £2.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's annoying as well, because if this wasn't the third film in a trilogy, it wouldn't be as bad, but you can't help compare it. And again, Nicole Kidman in the first film and Hugh Grant in the second film, they're villains. They are motivated by their own hubris, and Millicent felt like her father had failed and that she had been abandoned and that their reputation was ruined. She wants to rectify that. And Hugh Grant, he is the most greedy and self-obsessed person who wants to fix his legacy as an actor. And both Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant do fantastic jobs in those roles. But here, they're just motivated by money. And it's like,
money.
Is there nuance to this? Money because my ancestors want money and so I want money too?
That's a very strange generational thing to oh, I want money. I need to find money. I'm like, well, it's not that deep. And then it reveals at the end, El Dorado was just oranges.
Oh, good.
I bet Nathan Drake wouldn't be happy about that.
No, he really wouldn't.
I gotta say, I was let down by the... Okay, again, when it comes to, like, when you find such a mysterious place, there'll be something really odd about it. You'll find some mythical thing, unless you're going for the realism side of it. When it came to that, I was like, oh, okay, I thought there'll be more to this in El Dorado. Because Paddington finds his tribe at the end of the movie, and it's like, okay, cool, but what do we get from it? Nothing, really. We just don't really get to explore about that connection. And then Paddington's like, I want to stay with you, Brown family. I want to stay with you. Yeah, they're just like, okay.
Yeah,
that's it.
Like, yeah, great. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, we can stay with. That could have been so much more entrenched in the themes and in the character arcs, but I fear that both are so flimsy that, like, it's a very similar thing to what they're doing in Indiana Jones, actually. In Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, at the end, they're like, oh, I thought it was supposed to be a city of gold, but it wasn't really. And Indy's like, no, the word actually more accurately translates to treasure, and their treasure was knowledge. And the whole film is kind of about wanting greater knowledge. You know, in the 50s, America wanted the greater knowledge of space and aliens, and the villain wants that knowledge too. She wants to know everything, and Indy himself gets a taste of that knowledge and gets a chance to choose love over that. I'm not here to talk about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That's a very good film. A lot of people hate on that.
It's a great film. I think it was just like, Hugh Grant was such a revelation in Paddington 2. He is amazing. He really uplifts that entire film and strengthens it to a point where, yeah, I do think the first film is the better one, but everyone who says the second film is better, I can't really argue with them, because Hugh Grant is so very good. But this one, it felt like they tried too hard to have quirky villains, like Antonio Banderas, who for the most part is the antagonist until Olivia Colman takes that role at the end. He's the exact same villain, really, as Hugh Grant. He wants gold and he follows a map. He has numerous personalities and costumes who kind of talk to him, and he is deceiving everyone. That is exactly the case with Phoenix Buchanan in Paddington 2. And I just kind of think to myself, what is the point of doing just what we did in the last one? Hugh Grant gets a cameo in the credits and it's delightful, but they do the exact same joke as Paddington 2, where they're like, this is this guy, or this is this guy, this is this guy, hello, this is this guy. Like, that is just what they do in Paddington 2. And that in Paddington 2 is funny, but in this film, it's just bears. It's not even, I think you might have found that funny, John, but it is the same joke as what they do in Paddington 2. This is so boring. It's so derivative. It's so unoriginal. It's such a shame. American audiences who are seeing this film for the first time, I cannot even begin to comprehend the disappointment if they are Paddington fans, because my God, this is, they are also making Paddington 4 and they are making a Paddington musical. And it's like, without Paul King, I just don't think that these things, he's what made those films work. And obviously there are many talented people, and the director of this film, Dougal Wilson, doesn't do a bad job, but this is also his first feature film that he's directed, which was the case for Paul King in Paddington 1. You've got to start somewhere. I just feel like the writing wasn't up to scratch, especially when you're coming off Paddington 1 and 2. There are many things that feel like a downgrade. As I said earlier, we've lost Sally Hawkins. She didn't want to come back. So Emily Mortimer takes over the role of Mrs. Brown. And Emily Mortimer's not bad, but Sally Hawkins was perfect. She was Mrs. Brown. She felt so sweet and lovely and so warm and so kind. And there are so many moments where her performance uplifts. Like when she first meets Paddington and she just walks up to him slowly and just says, hello there. It's beautiful. It gives Obi-Wan Kenobi a run for his money with the best hello there in cinematic history.
Do you think movies would just pop out now of like, General Kenobi?
General Brown! It just feels like they missed everything that made Paddington work.
Direction-wise, I thought it was good, but it's just a script that could have been polished.
Yeah, there are so many moments when we have like a Paddington hijinks. He struggles to get his passport picture taken. He gets tied up in all the things around the thing. And it just felt like constantly there was little hijinks moments. And the first two films have their fair share of hijinks, but they're not happening all the time. Paddington only has two or three moments of hijinks in the first two films. In this film, it felt like every scene was like, oh, Paddington's getting himself into trouble again. And it's just like, Paul King, come back. Actually, don't come back. Make whatever you want. I feel like I'm more interested in what he's doing than I am in what this franchise is doing.
I sat alone watching this movie and I was like, dang, this is a movie. I was just reminiscing on like how happy you were when you went to see Wonka.
Yeah, those were the days, man.
Those were the days. You just blasted it on the car on the way back and you were like, the song for Wonka. I forgot which one.
My top song in Spotify Wrapped last year was You've Never Had Chocolate Like This. And that is important. I want everyone to know.
That came out in December? No, November. Yeah. Oh, for your 2024 Wrapped. Oh, yes, because this is filmed.
We're in 2025.
Timeline's confusing.
We're pre-recording. Welcome to the future.
My brain was in December. Sorry, guys. I was just talking about how great Sonic 3 was. Oh, yes.
Don't say that. Last time we said that, it was Venom 3, and Venom 3 sucked.
Sonic 3, yes. A film.
Silent 3 would be terrible. Yes. Right, well, I guess the moral of the tale is watch Paddington and Paddington 2. Don't waste your time with the third one. What are you going to give Paddington in Peru out of 10?
6.
Okay, I'm going to give it 4.
Paddington in Peru. It should be somewhere else, really.
Paddington in London, again.
I think he would go to Wetherspoons.
Yes! Yes, he would!
Order
true.
The burgers. You know those burgers that we had?
The Ultimate Burgers. Hell yeah, I do. Hell yeah, I know Ultimate Burgers.
Hell yeah.
Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, it's the big reveal, John. Next week.
In the year of our Lord 2025, we're going to be doing Captain America Civil War. Completing the Captain America trilogy before Brave New World.
That's crazy. No way. It feels like years since we went back to Captain America trilogy, the good old times with Marvel. Very looking forward to talk about it.
Send us an email, askfilmpod@gmail.com. And we'll answer that on the podcast next week, as in a year's time.
Yeah, in a year's time. Yes, you can follow us on Instagram, Out of Time Film Pod, to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asbel, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see editor clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Elgin Smith for the excellent theme and Ron Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.